Welcome to the Student Press Law Center podcast, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a nonprofit source of information and advocacy for the student media, and we work to help break down the barriers that prevent college and high school journalists from doing their best work. For more information about the center, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lamonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. It's an all-too-familiar scenario for people who work with student news publications. The student writes something edgy or controversial that pushes the buttons of some sensitive members of the audience. The principal responds by disciplining the journalism advisor on the grounds that the advisor should have stopped the students from publishing anything that portrays the school in a less than 100% favorable light. But what happened in the Alamakee County School District in Iowa didn't follow the usual script. When high school journalism teacher Ben Lang got an unfavorable disciplinary write-up for the content of an April Fool's Day humor edition that his students published, he fought back, and he had the law on his side. On November the 9th, Iowa's Court of Appeals issued a favorable ruling vindicating Ben Lang's refusal to censor his students' work. The ruling represented the first ever judicial application of the Iowa Student Free Expression Law, a statute passed in 1989 that protects students in Iowa public schools against censorship. Well, Jay Hammond is staff counsel for the Iowa State Education Association. The association is an NEA affiliate organization that represents and advocates on behalf of more than 34,000 school employees in the state of Iowa. Mr. Hammond was the lead legal counsel for teacher Ben Lang in his appeal of the school district's disciplinary action, and Mr. Hammond is here with us on the SPLC podcast to talk about the Court of Appeals' recent decision and what it means, not just for Ben Lang, but for all teachers of journalism and their students, not just in Iowa, but in all states with similar laws. Well, Jay Hammond, I want to thank you for being here and congratulate you on a favorable outcome in a difficult case. Start us off, if you would, with just a brief overview of the facts. What happened in Ben Lang School and how did we get here?
Well, thank you, Frank, both for the congratulations and for having me on the show here. I very much appreciate it. The first indication I had there was any problem came when our member Ben Lang contacted me following the second reprimand in October of 2009. The first reprimand was issued in April of 2008 after that April Fool's edition, but I didn't know anything about the situation until after the second reprimand had been issued. And the reason that was significant was that a two-day suspension without pay came with the reprimand on the second occasion. He wanted to know if there was anything we could do about that suspension without pay. And actually there was, because of a state law we have that really isn't germane to the issue here. But in contacting the district's attorney to deal with that two-day suspension, I kind of became immersed in the rest of the case. And after they withdrew the two-day suspension, then the question became whether we could do anything about the reprimands. And as I read the articles that had been published in both the April Fool's edition and the September 2009 edition, I didn't believe there was anything within those publications that would warrant a reprimand. And I knew at some level that we had the free expression statute in Iowa. I had been somewhat familiar with it in the past. And when I dug that out and actually went through it, I became more convinced that the administration had violated the students' publication rights under Section 280.22 of the Iowa Code. And as a result, it seemed to be inappropriate to discipline Ben as the journalism advisor for allowing the students to publish what the Iowa law allowed them to publish. And that's how we became involved, and we couldn't get anything done about the removal of the reprimand, so that's the point at which we instituted a petition for declaratory judgment, which at least in Iowa and I think most states is just a procedural mechanism to bring an issue before the court that involves a controversy over statutory rights. And the court then sits to interpret the statute and determine whether any rights have been violated. And that's how we wound up in the court.
Well, and you mentioned, importantly, the Iowa Student Free Expression Law. Iowa is one of seven states that has what's known as an anti-Hazelwood statute that, to some extent, reverses the impact of the Supreme Court's ruling in the 1988 Hazelwood decision. Explain to us a little bit more about your understanding about how the Iowa Student Free Expression Law works and how it came about.
Well, the free expression law was passed by the Iowa legislature in 1989, which was the first legislative session following the issuance of the Hazelwood decision by the Supreme Court. We don't really have in Iowa legislative history that a researcher can go to determine intent as they do under federal law, but it seemed like more than a coincidence to me that this statute would be passed on the heels of the Hazelwood decision, because the statute on its face grants far greater freedom to student authors than what the U.S. Supreme Court determined to be the rights of student authors under the First Amendment to the Constitution. And it's a pretty basic law that a state can grant rights in excess of those provided by the Constitution. They can't restrict rights granted by the U.S. Constitution, but they can certainly expand them. And the free expression law in Iowa basically says that students are in control of the publication and are free to publish materials, and then it lists some exceptions to that freedom to publish material. Two of them were never seriously at issue. The publications cannot be obscene. The publications cannot be libelous, and while that was a issue in the case, it was more of a minor issue. And the third prescription is that the student publication cannot print materials which encourage students to commit unlawful acts, violate lawful school regulations, or cause the material and substantial disruption of the orderly operation of the school.
Right.
In my opinion, when I looked at that and then I looked back at the publications, I believed that the materials had to actually encourage one of those three prohibited acts. And in my opinion, they did not do that. The April Fool's edition was exactly that. It was intended to be humorous, and some people may not have found it humorous, but the statute doesn't say you have to print something that appeals to everyone's humor. So it became a battle simply of whether the words of the publication violated one of these proscriptions. And feeling that it did not, I agreed with Ben that we should file the declaratory judgment.
Right. Well, you referenced the operative section of the statute, which talks in terms of encouraging students to either break the law or violate school regulations. As I understand it, the position that was being advanced by the school district is that this humorous issue, this very over-the-top cartoonish kind of humor, things like a photograph of a toddler with a cigarette, a photograph that had been obviously photoshopped to make a cheerleader look like she was pumped up on steroids, that things of that nature, these jokes were in fact encouragement to go out and commit the underlying acts that were being joked about. Is that correct?
That was the position of the school district. And I really thought there was a very short response to that, and that is that the issue on April's Fools, there was a disclaimer on each page that stated specifically that it was a parody and that there was no factual information contained in it. One of the most offensive articles to the school administration was about the high school biology teacher and the fact that a methamphetamine lab had been found in his laboratory, and that he was going to jail for whatever the rest of his life. And they even had a picture of the actual biology teacher next to the article, and the biology teacher had agreed to have some of his teeth blackened so that he appeared to have been on methamphetamine for quite some time.
Right.
And I think and when I read it, I did the same thing you're doing. I mean, I laughed. I knew it was intended to be humor, but not everybody saw it that way. And, you know, in fairness to the people in Northeast Iowa, there's an area where they have a methamphetamine problem, and the school district got a letter from a pastor, you know, who was counseling people, and they didn't think it was so funny. But again, you know, the statute doesn't prescribe poor humor or humor with which a reader does not agree. And it was clearly stated there was no factual information, and I really didn't think that that publication should be really questioned at all. But the administrators felt quite differently about it.
Right. Well, and so Mr. Lang took this case initially to a trial court in Iowa, which ruled in the school district's favor and upheld the discipline on the grounds that, in the view of the trial judge, the anti-Hazelwood law was not an anti-Hazelwood law at all. The anti-Hazelwood law, in fact, did nothing more than codify into Iowa statute the very, very minimal freedoms that the Supreme Court recognized under the First Amendment in the Hazelwood case. So take us from there to the Court of Appeals ruling, which comes out on November the 9th and then unanimously reverses the trial court.
Well, I think one of the things that made it easier for us in the Court of Appeals is, as you said, the district court really was quite clear in that it considered the Iowa statute to be a codification of Hazelwood, or at least should be interpreted in light of Hazelwood. Of course, we were looking at it from exactly the polar opposite end of that continuum,
right.
And that was that the Iowa legislature passed that law to provide these greater freedoms than the court provided in Hazelwood, because, very simply, if the legislature in Iowa had been content with Hazelwood, there would have been no need to pass any sort of law in Iowa.
Sure.
Iowa students would still be subject to the same constraints of administrator discretion as provided for in the Hazelwood decision. And that, to me, was always kind of, to use the colloquialism these days, a no-brainer. I don't really see how you can read 280.22 of the Iowa Code and conclude it's a codification of Hazelwood. I remember when I first contacted the SPLC there, I think all of you were aghast that that someone would interpret that law in that fashion. Well, the fact of the matter is the Court of Appeals did not agree with the trial court at all. They agreed that the section was, that the Iowa statute was in fact an anti-Hazelwood statute. There have been a number of commentators, including the SPLC, that have characterized the Iowa law and those of other states that you mentioned in your opening remarks there as anti-Hazelwood statutes, and there never really seemed to be any doubt that that's the way the court read it. From there, it was just a question of interpreting the word encourage in the statute, because that's what we hammered on, was you couldn't ignore that word. The materials have to actually encourage. And to me, that's the authors of the articles promoting the idea that the student readers go out and commit one of the prohibited acts. And I think the school district was attempting to have the court read that much more passively, so that if you just write about a controversial issue or you poke fun at a controversial issue, you are actually encouraging readers to engage in that kind of conduct you're poking fun at, which I think really violates the intent of the Iowa statute, which is what the court also found. They interpreted the word courage along the same lines we did, and simply found that in a reading of those documents that were printed, nothing in those documents encouraged the prescribed acts. For us, it was kind of a twofold win. That vindicated student publication rights in Iowa, but what really started this whole thing was the two reprimands that were issued to my client. And the argument in the Court of Appeals there was simply that if you find that the statute was not violated by these publications, it makes no sense to allow a reprimand to be issued to the individual who was the advisor of the paper, for the simple reason you put him in a box. He either needs to deny students the right to publish materials he understands state law allows them to publish and protect his professional integrity, or it requires him to deny and risk his professional jeopardy, or to deny the students their publication rights in an effort to appease the administration and make sure he doesn't suffer any kind of censure for it. And I think the court clearly understood that in its opinion. And at the end of the opinion, we do have a rule in Iowa for declaratory judgments that says the court can grant what's called supplemental relief. So mm-hmm. If you determine somebody's rights have been violated, I've always assumed that rule was so the court could do something about it. in an oral argument, they did ask whether they could micromanage the school district in terms of requiring them to remove the reprimands. And I went to that rule on supplemental relief, and that only made sense that they would use that power to provide the supplemental relief of taking those, ordering those reprimands to be removed, and in fact they did. So we were very gratified by the ruling as a whole.
Right. And really, this was a complete legal victory because it is possible for a court to simply vacate the decision that was handed down below and to say, go back and reconsider this in light of a different legal standard. But no, the court did no such thing. It actually went further and it said, go ahead and give Ben Lang the relief that he wants, which is to purge these undeserved reprimands out of his file. So it really was quite a thorough victory and one that, that frankly, you rarely get in a student expression case.
That is really true. And while we were waiting for the decision, I was very concerned that the court might spot some kind of procedural issue that wasn't argued or wasn't briefed, or as you said, remand it to the district court for reconsideration in light of whatever standard the Iowa Court of Appeals decided was appropriate. But no, in fact, they didn't. I don't do this for. I've been at this for 30 years, and I contact Ben generally by email during the day because he's teaching. And when I wrote the email to Ben after I had read the decision, I used two words. I said total victory, and I don't know that I've ever said that before. So we were very pleased that the court did not skirt the issue. They addressed it head on. Either these publications, and you know there are no material facts disputed. So summary judgment should be right. Nobody can dispute what was in the articles. They're there for the court to read. They either violated the statute or they didn't, and that's exactly where the court went. And we were very happy that they took that approach.
Well, one of the things, and I think it bears emphasis that you pointed out, is it's so important about this decision, and frankly, something that may be applicable by way of analogy in other states, whether they have an anti-Hazelwood law or not, is this idea that simply writing about a taboo subject, whether that be steroids or methamphetamine or violations of the dress code, is not the same thing as encouraging people to engage in the underlying taboo behavior, and that's quite an important distinction, and one that frankly school administrators don't always make. Just sort of by way of closing and wrap up, any other thoughts, Jay Hammond, on what you think the longer term ramifications, assuming that this ruling stands, assuming that it's not successfully challenged in the Iowa Supreme Court, about what this ruling means for the autonomy of student journalists and also for the job security of the people who advise them?
Well, I think it creates a tremendous advantage on both of those counts. I think journalism advisors will feel much more at ease, particularly if an administrator challenges them on something. I'll give you an example. I believe one of the articles at issue in Hazelwood was an article on teen pregnancy.
Right.
I feel fairly certain that if the same newspaper, student newspaper, had published an article on teen pregnancy, my advisor would have been in a whole world of hurt. That certainly would not have been considered appropriate subject matter by these administrators. Now, with this decision in hand, I think those kinds of articles, controversial articles, I mean, I even at one point said I'd hate to publish an article on violence in the schools because these administrators would think that the newspaper was promoting violence in the schools, even though it may have been just an objective journalistic article. But when they objected to some of the things they objected to here, all those kinds of thoughts run through your mind. So I think it will make student newspaper advisors much more comfortable in terms of what the limits are on what their students want to publish. Because let's face it, a 60-year-old administrator is not going to have the same sense of humor or necessarily think the same way as a junior in high school.
Right.
But for the students, I think it's valuable because it puts a factual context to this legalistic statute that anyone can read, but you don't really have a feel for what the true constraints are until you can attach some facts to that particular statute and see how a court resolved them. So I think this will probably be an opinion, as you said, if it stands, and we certainly hope it will, that students will be reading for quite some time in their journalism classes to give a little flesh, if you will, to what the actual rights are that they have to publish. At least I hope so.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Jay Hammond of the Iowa State Education Association, and thank you for your advocacy on behalf of the rights of journalism educators. For those of you listening, you can find a copy of the November 9th court ruling in the case of Lang versus Dierks, D-I-E-R-C-K-S, on our website, www.splc.org. We hope you'll become a frequent visitor to the SPLC website and take advantage of all the legal and educational reference materials we offer. While you're there, take a minute to subscribe to the RSS feed for the SPLC's news alerts. And if you're a student journalist or a journalism educator who has any question about the law, call our hotline at 703-807-1904 or email us at splc@splc.org. Thank you for listening.